At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now.
Welcome to Star Talk All-Stars. I'm your all-star host of the evening, Bill Nye, and I'm here with my co-host, the remarkable and exciting Chuck Nice.
Hey, Bill.
And on this episode of All-Stars, Chuck, we're talking about planetary defense.
Nice.
Defending the Earth.
I did not know that we need defending.
From an asteroid.
Are they defending our honor?
No, it's asteroids.
It's just asteroids.
And comets.
So the, okay, and comets.
Yeah, which right. In some level are hard to distinguish, but...
The universe is a hostile place.
Can be.
Yeah.
So there is no evidence whatsoever that the ancient dinosaurs had a space program.
Yeah.
And it was hard on them.
Is that because they didn't have opposable thumbs?
Well, their arms are so short.
Just tiny, tiny, tiny arms.
On some of them. But
I would try, but I can't reach it.
So, but they may have, I'm not joking, maybe they did have a space program, but it didn't show up in the fossil record.
Right. So now when you think about that, let me just ask you, since we know that that was an event that happened, right? Because, you know, they look at the layers in the Earth. And
you got it. Yes, Chuck. Right? You're such a nerd. I love you.
So,
layer of iridium.
A layer of iridium.
Atomic number?
Oh, I don't know.
77.
There you go.
So 77 is an odd number. It's not that common. So when you find it, and so on and so on.
Right. So here's what I... Following thing that I read that it basically, when we had this cataclysmic collision, right, then up comes all this detritus. It's superheated, and then it just rains fire and destroys everything. Is that accurate?
Well, yeah. So astronomers speculate that the cone of the ejecta.
Oh.
The ejected material.
Yeah.
Is bigger around than the diameter of the Earth. So gravity pulled it into a big ring of fire or sphere of fire.
Right.
And it was very troublesome.
So, I love when you understate things.
So when the only animals that made it through were underground.
They were underground animals.
Yeah. And or mostly underground.
Right. Or so maybe.
You're a descendant of some subterranean.
Subterranean little thing that crawled up to the surface after everything.
Or scurried.
Or scurried up. Yes. Yeah. In my case, probably scurried.
Spry. Right. Spryly.
Right. Yeah.
Very athletically bounded to the surface.
Or could have been like cave-dwelling animals at the same time.
Yeah.
Those
sure. animals. Oh, yeah. I'm an expert on cave. It could be. It's very reasonable. Yes.
Okay, cool. It's a fascinating...
Oh, man, it's amazing. So when I was in second grade, Mrs. McGonagall reads to us from a big book. The reason the ancient dinosaurs died is they had small brains, which is just
lame.
Isn't
that crazy? Because you have heard people say... People still say that today.
Well, the reason they died off is because they weren't intelligent creatures. They had tiny brains, and so they couldn't adapt.
So make a joke there about what my old boss, right there. But he was alive. So what I'm saying is it was in my lifetime that this discovery was made, 1980, 1983... That people discovered this layer of iridium, which is almost certainly from an ancient asteroid, which is almost certainly the ancient asteroid that finished off the ancient dinosaurs. They may have been having trouble with volcanism, sulfur being pumped into the sky from volcanoes in what is now India,
right,
where these tectonic plates are colliding. But they were finished off by a big rock from the sky, or group of rocks from the sky.
Nice. Man. God. Wow. I mean, it's exciting and fascinating, and at the same time, it's kind of scary.
Yes, we don't want it to happen again. Yeah, so what we want to do is deflect an asteroid if it starts coming toward us.
Because it happened once.
Yes.
It could happen
again. It turns out the Earth, there's all sorts of impact craters if you know what you're looking for.
Right.
So you look at the moon.
I was going to say, and the moon, God, what a...
You look at Mars.
What a beautiful little snapshot
it's
you have there.
Crater festival.
Right.
So it's very reasonable that the same number of impacts per square meter, per kilometer happened here. But the Earth has all these processes. We have tectonic plates, grinding. We have rain, snow, wind. And so these craters get erased over millennia.
Right.
So what we want to do is detect all the Earth-crossing asteroids that have the potential to hit us. And then if we find one, it is to be hoped 30 years out, mm-hmm. and we could send out the right spacecraft and give it a little...
Nice. Little,
except it's in space. There's no sound. It's just...
That was it. That was the sound.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out some more weather-related events I can bring up now.
The sound effects.
So I can get you to do the sound.
Can you do the thunderstorm?
It is thunder. Less thunder. Let me see.
That's pretty good, Dad. That's very good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so
we've got our cosmic
queries. Really the sound effect, Star Talk sound effects show. Maybe that's coming.
The sound effects fest coming to Star Talk very soon. We've got our cosmic queries. Of course, we've gleaned these questions from all over the internet. And
all over the cosmos.
All over the cosmos.
You can be on Betelgeuse, in orbit around Betelgeuse. If you can get us... query.
We will.
Onto the internet, roughly in English, we'll do what we can.
There you go.
If it comes in Betelgeusean and we can go to Google Translate,
yeah.
We're in for you, man. We are here for you. And I say man, it could be entity.
Right.
We're here for you, entity.
Or alien.
That's where I went with entity.
Yeah, there you go. Well, this is what Paul Sykes says.
Mike.
Chuck? Yes.
Paul?
Paul. You know what? Let's go with Chris.
Chris?
Well, you know, we always start with a Patreon question, and the reason why we start with a Patreon question is because those people support us directly.
Directly. They are patrons.
They are patrons.
Of Star Talk.
They are infusing
we love you.
Cash directly
to us. So, yes, you can buy your way onto the show.
Boom. That's it.
That's what Dr. Nice is telling
us. That's exactly right. You can buy your way onto this show, you know. And you know what? Speaking of buying our hearts, you can also support us on StarTalkAllAccess.com. Make a subscription, and you will be supporting the show directly that way as well. And we shall forever love you.
Way to go, person out there, entity. Read the question, Chuck.
Here's a question, Chuck. Here we go. Bill, do you believe the biggest threat to humanity is from asteroids, or is it from humanity?
Oh, from us right now.
Right.
I mean, humans are the big problem. There's a lot of us breathing and burning the same atmosphere, and right now... The world's most influential democracy is run by people who say they don't believe in human-caused climate change.
Mm.
I got a feeling that when shoving and pushing comes to shove, that they'll change. But right now, it's very troubling. So, yes, humans are the biggest problem. However, one rock from outer space at 11 kilometers a second is a very low probability event. But very high consequence event.
So true.
Seldom get in a car wreck, but when you do, it sucks.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Seldom get hit with an asteroid, but when you do, man, whoa, man.
You can't call State Farm
or
Allstate or
no, yes.
Prudential. You can't call those guys.
Any of those guys.
Right.
Boom, ba, boom, 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 whatever that. Yeah
that was it.
Do.
That is.
Yeah.
Oh, clearly a very effective ad campaign. Here's Brittany Mencotti. And Brittany,
what did she do to anger you or just make you fill you with passion? Mencotti.
Mencotti.
Because I think it's probably Mencotti.
It is Mencotti. Brittany Mencotti says this. Hey, Bill.
Chuck. Brittany.
I'm a psychology student at the University of Kentucky.
Right on.
Oh, cats. I was wondering, if money was not an issue, what would be the very best planetary defense given our current technology?
Two things.
Go ahead.
Invest in a spacecraft that would be the next to follow on to, well, there's one called NEOWISE.
Okay.
The next spacecraft to look for asteroids. And as the saying goes, finding an asteroid is like looking for a charcoal briquette in the dark.
Ah, I gotcha.
It's difficult.
I gotcha.
But you can do it.
Or like finding Chuck Nice at night when he's not smiling.
I let you make that joke, but I'm familiar with it.
I love it. And Bill was just like, okay, and good for you.
I'm not going to go with you.
Now you're not going to drag me down that rabbit hole, Chuck.
You can make such a joke. I can't.
Right, exactly.
I was brought up in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Many years ago when it really was a nice southern racist town. And I've heard a lot of that, but I do my best.
But see, that's because
my life.
That's because you are a great human being, okay? And you know the difference between a joke and the fact that, okay, I know he's joking, and a joke, and, well, if I say it, it's still offensive because I'm saying it. See, so, you know, I get what you're saying, though. I have a great deal of respect for you for that.
I'm playing the hand I'm dealt here. Yeah, people are more alike than they are different.
This is true.
Now, the other part of the planetary defense thing that we have to deal with come up with, the first one is detecting the asteroids.
So that's a spaceship.
Second thing is the spaceship.
Okay, so the first thing is detection.
And detection is probably best done with a spacecraft that's about 3/4 of an astronomical unit from the sun. That's about the same distance from the sun as Venus.
Okay.
However, what would be styling is if you had it with a solar sail so it could go around slowly.
Sweet.
That would be pretty styling. Mm. And then you'd look for all these asteroids that are in the infrared. So here's the thing. Even if it's a charcoal briquette in the dark,
mm-hmm.
Chuck Nice joke inserted here, it still glows in the infrared.
Right.
As do you, by the way.
Yes.
So it's like I can distinguish you from asteroids.
Don't worry. I saw the movie Predator.
So you can see the asteroid in the infrared. They glow at about 150 kelvins.
Okay.
And that's 150 Celsius degrees above absolute zero. So with the right detector, you can detect. And then that spacecraft would assay or keep track of all these asteroids. And then we'd build a spacecraft to give one of them a nudge. And that would be, this is all kind of existing technology, everybody. Right. But Brittany said unlimited cash.
Doesn't make a difference. We can do whatever we want.
For $450 million, $500 million, we could do the spacecraft, the detector, and then for, give me another number, $5 billion, we could build the deflector spacecraft.
You know, I have to tell you, with as much money as we waste on other things, that is not a bad
thing. Well, saving the Earth from death of everyone, exactly. Control, Alt, Delete for all humankind. Yeah, that's worth it.
That's kind of worth it.
But all right. I've been at that fancy thing, the TED talk thing.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this asteroid problem, and people laugh. Hit with an asteroid. But if it happened, it would really suck, Chuck.
Yes, it would.
It would be a bad old thing.
And the funny thing is, people do laugh, and there's been several major motion pictures made about it, and people, you know, they look at it as folly. But what I always say is, it's already happened.
Dude.
Right.
Dudette.
What don't you get about that?
It's already
happened.
And by the way, in general, there is no business case for a commercial company to make an asteroid deflector.
Yeah.
There isn't a reason to do it.
Yeah, you know, I don't see a lot of profit in that.
Yeah. However, people do try to raise money to observe asteroids, but that's different from building a spacecraft with no one to sell it to.
Right. Cool.
So what if you were?
Yes.
What if you were an entrepreneur so wealthy that you built your own spacecraft and then you threatened to not use it unless
they paid you. That is so delightfully evil.
But it's just unlikely, because what is the guy?
Hey, that's a long
gal want himself to get herself to get destroyed too?
Well, no, that's because you know you have an evil layer that's also orbiting the
resistant.
Earth.
Right. Oh, it's orbiting
it's
the
orbiting
Earth.
The Earth.
Your way
so you can escape to your evil layer.
You.
Yeah.
You're thinking.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's go to Nelson Saw. Nelson Saw says, what's the soonest we can detect a likely collision, and what could we do about it in that time frame?
Well, everybody wants 30 years. That's what people want.
Whoa, that long?
Yeah, so you detect the asteroid, and then you have 10 years to build the spacecraft, and then 20 years out there with the spacecraft just gently, except in space there's no sound. on the asteroid. He's giving it a little nudge.
It's a little nudge.
And so astronaut Ed Lu, who runs the B612 Foundation, which is named after the asteroid that the little prince lives on, and is an acquaintance of mine and is a Cornellian, has a patent on the space tractor. This is a spacecraft that is so massive. How massive is it? Its own gravity would pull the asteroid
off course.
It's just ever so.
Slightly. And that's all you
ever
need.
So. That's all you need.
All you
so
need.
It doesn't cross the Earth's orbit when we're there.
Right.
Wow.
Cross the Earth's orbit, just not while the Earth's there.
It's not we're there. Right. Exactly.
How hard could it be? Yeah,
exactly.
It's rocket science, people.
Nice. Nice. That's excellent.
That's you. Nice.
Let's go to Sean Harris.
Sean.
Sean says, what policies or plans are currently in place to detect incoming threats from asteroids? Is there a foolproof plan to eliminate those threats and avoid death and destruction here on the Earth's surface?
We caution you, Sean, against anybody ever who tells you it's foolproof.
Ooh.
Yeah, we just. But I know what you're driving at. No, there's. We have this NEOWISE spacecraft, NEOWISE 2, that are measuring asteroids. And there are trajectories, but it's not foolproof. And the more of that we do, the better. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, that
you could do more.
You could do more. But
by the way, all the money that's spent in space is spent on Earth. This would be a worthy use of our intellect and treasure, people.
Ah, so true.
Make me come over there.
Oh, man. Hey, Kathy Francois says, How do you purpose to educate the masses on the importance
of... You mean propose? Yeah, I know you're looking up and looking down.
I was. Right. What did I say?
Purpose.
Did I say purpose?
Which must be related to propose, but I'm not etymologically sophisticated enough. Yes.
How do you propose to educate the masses on an important issue such as this? I mean, Star Talk is an amazing podcast, but everyone...
It's the best.
It's totally... Okay, but not everyone wants to listen or learn.
What'd you say? Lead on. Not everyone wants to listen or learn.
How can we help spread the news to those who are less passionate about science? You know, this is a problem, I think, what Kathy says here, I think is a problem for so many science-related issues, which is if you can motivate a mass awareness, then you can actually... create a campaign to get those in charge to do something.
Chuck, why do you do this podcast? You're trying to change the world.
This is true.
Trying to make the world scientifically literate.
In my own little way, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So what I would say, Kathy, who is it?
Kathy Francois.
Kathy, this is what we're doing here is we're trying to change the world. We are trying to influence people. If you can spread the word about listening to Star Talk podcast, having the time of your life, then it'll build. In cascade fashion. So this is why Chuck and I do this job, or this activity is to get people excited about science so that we'll have scientifically literate people, and especially scientifically literate voters, which it is to be hoped will lead to scientifically literate politicians.
Yes.
Will make scientifically informed decisions about our use of intellect and treasure so that we can, dare I say it, save the world. This is Star Talk All-Star Edition. I'm your host, Bill Nye, with Chuck Nice. We'll be right back after this.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Hey, welcome back. Welcome back. Bill Nye here. Welcome back to Star Talk Cosmic Queries. I'm here with my co-host, the remarkable and exciting Chuck Nice.
Hey.
And this is where we take your inquiries.
Yes.
From anywhere in the cosmos.
Anywhere in the cosmos.
And we do our best to provide you with a thoughtful, insightful thought about the cosmos and your query.
There you go.
Take it, Chuck.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
I had some trouble.
Let me just read this one from Laurel Riffle. Here's what she says. I don't have a question for you. I just want to thank you for inspiring my generation.
Wow.
And indirectly inspiring subsequent generations.
Oh, I love you, Laurel.
There you go, man.
Laurel's children.
Just wanted to get that out of the way. I love you, man. There's really no place in the show for that, so let's just do it up front and do it.
You just put a place.
I had to make a place for that. That's a great, great sentiment.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. And you know what? She is not alone, I have to tell you. Here's the best thing, guys. Going out with Bill Nye and being on the street. And then watching people go, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
So. What they mean is, oh, my entity. And I presume deity.
Deity. Oh, my deity.
And all that aside, no, it is very nice.
It's a lot better
than I hate you, you suck. I hear once in a while.
There you go. Hey, Justin Codes wants to know this. What level of international cooperation would be required in order to defend the planet from an asteroid or comet? Is it even possible in today's climate of conflict when the world's governments can't even come together to combat climate change to get them to come together and combat this threat? Wow, that's a pretty deep question, man.
No, but the answer is yes. How do you get to the International Space Station? On a Russian rocket.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you explore Mars with with cooperation from Japanese Aerospace Exploration, Roscosmos, mm-hmm. and European Space Agency? That's how you do things. So there's a lot of international cooperation when it comes to space.
Right. Okay.
Exploration.
So
the answer is, yeah, pretty doable. But right now, I got to speculate that the search for asteroids will still be led by the U.S. and National Aeronautics and Space Administration.
Okay.
NASA. But then the actual deflecting, that'll be a team effort, I think.
So once we identify the problem, which it'll be easier to get people to get on board once you identify.
Oh, man, if you had a real asteroid really coming,
you'd
be really taking a meeting.
Yeah.
You don't want to send Bruce Willis. I mean, he's a fine guy. But you don't want to blow it up. You just want to give it a nudge, because if you blow it up, there's a chance you'll make it worse.
Right. So just give it a nudge. But you do want an Aerosmith soundtrack while it's happening.
Can you provide that?
Not really.
Do we have to pay royalties if I whistle that?
Sorry. No. And I knew it was Dude Looks Like a Lady, too, so not bad. There you go.
I did what I could.
Yeah. All right. J. William Bosch wants to know this. What is the probability that whatever we do could make matters worse?
It's funny you should bring that up right after that little commentation that I commented.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, you don't want to make it so that you accidentally have a piece of it that's going even faster and going to hit the Earth earlier in its orbit, which is apparently a possibility. Only if the asteroid is really close and there really isn't time to give it a nudge, then you'd blow it up.
That's when you'd blow it up.
Yeah, but we just don't want to do that, everybody. And plus, it takes a tremendous amount of energy trying to blow up a rock planet.
Right.
It's. I mean, I know people do it in science fiction, but in real life, it's a real space. It's a hard thing.
Now, but this would have to be an asteroid, because now some comets are like marshmallowy, right?
So. Even worse. How do you blow up a marshmallow? You're just going to get more marsh and mellow.
More marsh and more mellow.
You're not really going to change anything.
Right. Okay. So there you go. Okay.
Uh-oh. Okay. Wait. He was ready. Then he stopped himself. Yeah, stumped him somehow.
You stumped me because your name was on a different page, J.D. Prevost.
J.D., what is J.D.'s inquiry?
J.D. says this. To the great one, Bill Nye.
Oh, there
I have been seeing
talking.
A few stories about ground-based lasers being used to hit asteroids millions of miles away to change their trajectory. Is this tech realistic, or is it even possible?
It's really hard. So one of the things we are considering is putting a reflective surface on an asteroid. So sunlight would hit it and give it a little nudge. The pressure of photons, the momentum of photons, even though they have no mass.
Right.
They have momentum, and it would nudge the asteroid ever so nudgingly.
I believe you have a little thing called a solar sail.
Been discussed, yes. And so trying to keep the beam of a laser on the asteroid shooting from the Earth or the far side of the moon is not trivial. I'm not saying it couldn't be done. And you could do it, let's say, every month. The moon goes around the Earth and you zap it for a few Earth days or weeks, and then the moon would go on the other side and you'd wait. That's possible. But more likely is to go out there and change the reflectivity of the asteroid. And by the way, one of the things that makes asteroids hard to track is this Jarkowski effect, where they reflect sunlight while they're spinning. So some sides of the asteroids are shiny, other sides are darker.
Mm-hmm.
Some sides of the asteroid have potholes and don't reflect very well. Other sides of an asteroid might be smoother and more reflective.
Mm-hmm.
So they're spinning very slowly in space. And so they change their trajectories, depending on how light is hitting them and how they're rotating. So it's one more...
Oh, wow. That's
makes it a little tricky.
A little more tricky. Because,
and so you got to track them. You got to track them good. Track them well.
Everything
I said track them good for comedic effect. All right, Romarians out there.
Track them good.
That's right.
Am right. All right, here we go. Natalie Wilcox says, hi, Bill. Have you heard of the Comet Research Group? Do you believe, as they do, that we need to be paying more attention to the Taurid meteor stream and that it poses a threat to us annually? Also, what do you think about their research regarding the cataclysmic impact events that potentially took place 12,800 years ago? Thank you.
Something to be concerned about. But whether or not that specific comet trail that induces that specific meteor shower, whether that's a big concern, I'm not an expert on. I don't know.
But okay.
Was there a substantial meteoric impact 12,800 years ago? Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
We had one at Chelyabinsk that could have been a big deal. We had one in Tunguska. Which could have, I mean, if the Tunguska event in 1908 had landed on Paris, that would be the end of Paris.
That would have been the end of Paris.
I mean, that's it. Or Poughkeepsie. What did I mention earlier? Kansas City. It would be done. So there's nobody in control of this right now. If one of these objects comes in, they're very hard to see.
Mm-hmm.
It happens in a moment.
So now, how big was the object that came in just recently?
Chelyabinsk?
In Russia.
It was, people say 25 meters, 30 meters.
Really?
Not even that big, you know, like as big as smaller than your house.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not a big meter.
Apartment-sized thing. It's just, they're going so fast.
Right.
They have so much energy that they're going at least 11 kilometers a second, which is escape velocity. So
now, as another question, because I've gone through all of these, and so I don't see anybody ask this, so I'm just going to ask.
Chuck, you're the host of the co-host of the show.
Yeah, so I get to
ask. So lay it on us, man.
So, is there, you know, when this asteroid hits, Okay, of course, the impact, we know what that does.
We do?
But,
it's bad.
But the first impact is actually with the atmosphere.
That's right.
So what exactly does that do?
You're such a nerd. I love you, man. So in the case of Chelyabinsk, you know, there was a sonic boom or a series of sonic booms.
Right.
It hit the ground. People hear the sonic booms. They look up. They see the streak in the sky. They see the secret. Doggone it. They see the streak in the sky first.
Right.
And they go, oh, there's a streak in the sky. Well, it's not going to hit me. I'll relax. And 3 minutes later, the sonic boom hits the ground and blows out all the windows. And that's why there were so many, apparently 1,000 injuries, substantial sutures and stuff.
Yeah.
People standing near glass windows.
All in glass.
Very strong sonic boom hit the ground and blew all the windows into everybody's face. It was a surprising result that you just wouldn't think of.
Right.
The first time it happens.
That's really interesting. So if you see a streak in the sky, you better get someplace safe.
A couple minutes to get out of the glass.
Get out of the glass.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
As the old saying goes, by analogy to earthquakes, earthquakes don't kill people. Buildings kill people.
Right.
That's right. So meteorites that that cause sonic booms don't hurt people. Glass windows hurt people. This is analogy, everyone.
Right, right.
Not you know, it's an aphorism. It's not going to direct your entire life. Something to think about. You see the big streak, there are 3 minutes, there might be a big sonic boom.
There you
could
go.
Blow all the windows. It did blow the windows out.
Wow.
Yeah, lead on.
All right. Nathan Emily says, hello, Dr. Nye. What are the plans to put into orbit a satellite whose sole job is to watch the skies 24 hours a day in all directions?
All directions is the tough part, but NEOWISE is the satellite that does that. And we want to build follow-ons, do more awning of following. But watching 24-7, it does watch 24-7, but not the entire sky. It points to different places.
And is that because there's
just limitations?
It's just limitations.
Look at things. So there's you. You can't look in every direction at once.
No.
Although your wife has eyes in the back of her head.
Ah, there you go. That was it.
Anyone?
I was going with my mom, but, you know, it's the same thing.
Well, they're in.
I've been married long enough that it's the same thing.
They have slideshows on Tuesdays where they talk about how to mess with you.
Right. So let me ask you, pardon me.
Squeaky situation here. Yes.
Is there a likelihood of a direction from which an asteroid will come, or will we just be blindsided?
I'm not an expert, but I would speculate no.
Oh. Okay.
Except it's probably going the same direction we are around the sun.
Aha.
You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Because the cosmic disk, the primordial disk of dust that formed us, would have a
particular flow.
A net direction.
Right.
So here's the thing, everybody. You have a big bunch of cosmic dust 4.5 billion years ago, and it has, even if it's dust, it has gravity. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you've ever observed dust on a bookshelf, one of the little insights that Isaac Newton had was that not only does the Earth have gravity that's pulling the dust down, the dust must needs have ever so slight bit of gravity that's ever so slight pulling the Earth up.
Ooh.
They're mutually attracted, right?
Mutually attracted.
Cosmic dust comes together. It's going to have, it will not be perfectly balanced. It's like a cloud. There'll be bulges and bubbles. And so it ends up with a net, as we say, angular momentum. It ends up with a net spin.
Spin, right.
And here we are with that resolves itself into a big disk.
Mm-hmm.
People do mathematical models of this, and you get little swirl pools, and that becomes like the planet Earth.
Cool.
And here we are.
Here we are.
Swirling and pooling.
And now you know your history.
Of
how you got here.
Of the solar system.
The solar system. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it really is an amazing insight. So we are made of cosmic dust. We are made of stardust.
Mm-hmm.
So we are, Chuck, you and I, are one of the ways the cosmos knows itself.
Sweet.
That to me is just,
hey,
gives me the shaky wakes.
It makes me feel like I have purpose.
Well, Chuck, you don't.
Finally.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, Chuck, let's not get crazy.
Yeah,
let's not get carried away, Chuck.
I know. The three kids are your purpose. That's what you do.
Man, on that one. All right. Steve Andrews wants to know this. If the Earth was in danger of an asteroid strike today.
Yes.
Could we protect ourselves?
I mean, okay, like this afternoon kind of thing?
Well, no, not like we find out today.
Yeah.
Asteroid is
when's it going to show
way.
Up?
On the way. I don't know.
If it's 30 years from now, if we discover it today that it's going to hit us in 30 years, let's get to work.
All right. So now I'm going to modify Steve's question. What is
it's a friendly amendment.
What is the it's a friendly amendment. What is the absolute shortest window that we could have as an alert to?
I think it's less than 10 years. I think it's about 10 years.
10 years.
There are people I've been in meetings and seeing scientific papers presented on this, it's about 10 years.
About 10 years.
30 is way better.
30 is better, but 10 we might be able to do.
Might have a shot.
Might have a shot.
And that's a maybe.
Okay.
That's a maybe.
Wow. All right.
I mean, wow. I mean, so.
I mean, 10 years is not a long time.
No, yes.
You think about it.
Right.
You know?
No. Huh. You can't build a highway. You can't build a big dig in Boston in 10 years, let alone build a spacecraft that no one's ever thought of and go out and deflect an asteroid in deep space and get everybody in the world to take your word for it that you're really doing it.
That's wicked high.
Especially when you put some explosive on it to give it some pressure wave in space, and everybody's taking your word for it that you're putting this enormous nuclear weapon on top of a rocket for the good of all humankind rather than for some nefarious weaponizing of space.
I could see where you might have a problem convincing
people. So you'd maybe need international treaties with normal people who can conduct statecraft in traditional ways.
Okay, and very quickly on top of that.
Just thinking out loud.
Do we have in place any international protocol in case something like this happens?
Well, we have the International Space Treaty from 1967,
okay,
which mumbles about this. But when it's really time, that's when we're really going to have to have agreements. And who's going to build the rocket? And who's going to launch it? And who's going to track it? And who's going to take responsibility for it? It's all so exciting! As is all of All-Star Star Talk. And I'm your host, Bill Nye, along with Chuck Nice. And you and I will be back after this.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Star Talk All-Star Edition. I'm your all-star host, Bill Nye. I'm here with the remarkable and charming Chuck Nice.
Ah, thank you, Bill.
And the two of us are going to do our best to address your cosmic queries. These will be inquiries from anywhere, Chuck.
Anywhere.
Anywhere in the cosmos.
That's right.
You could be out there. You could be in the icy north polar region of Mercury.
Wow.
And if you can transmit to us a question that's parsable in English onto the electric internet.
Yep.
We will do our. We are right here for
you. We're right here for you.
Mercurian.
Mm-hmm. We will not be able to provide you with thermal underwear, though.
Well, you figure if you're there with internet access,
you're probably good on that.
Warm
right?
clothes.
Probably good on the
and something to breathe.
Something to breathe and some thermals to keep you toasty.
So hit us with the today. By the way, if you're just rejoining us, we're talking about planetary defense.
Yes,
keeping the Earth from getting hit with a cosmic impactor.
A fascinating subject.
It really is, and it's important.
And important.
It's near and dear to us at the Planetary Society, the world's largest non-governmental space interest organization, of which I'm the CEO, because this is our old mission. Carl Sagan, when I was in his class,
mm-hmm.
in the disco era, would talk about the Tunguska event,
mm-hmm.
where June 30th in the modern calendar, 1908, Tunguska region of Siberia was hit with something. It blew down all the trees in a moment. And if that had happened in a big city, that would be the end of the big city.
Yeah.
Be it. And so since then, long after Carl Sagan's class, Chelyabinsk, also in Russia, got with a big sparky thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a much smaller event, but nevertheless recorded on countless cameras. And so it's something to think about. Don't want to get hit with an asteroid.
Yeah, you don't.
With that said, Chuck,
and judging
welcome
from...
back to the show, thank listener.
Thank you, sir. And those two events make me think that maybe Russia should be a little more involved in this.
The thing to keep in mind about Russia, first of all, let's say we take the Earth and divide it in half by hemispheres.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to hit one hemisphere or the other.
Okay.
That's one and two. Then Russia takes up 9 time zones.
Yes.
It's a third of the, it's more than a third of the world.
Right. So.
Or that former Soviet Union. So if it's going to hit someplace, it's likely
it's
to hit.
Likely to hit there. Yeah. Yeah. There or the Pacific.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah,
about it.
True fact, not a false fact.
There you go. All right.
I say true fact, that's a joke, everybody. Ha, ha, ha.
Let's go to Anna Bacon. The Doomsday shows but about asteroids. Let me just start this.
Yeah, just do it without the breaks between every word.
That I...
Slow talkers of America.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so Anna Bacon says this. The Doomsday shows about asteroids always have it hitting the planet, but... what would happen if the asteroid passed between the Earth or the Moon, or if it hit the Moon instead of the Earth?
Well, we've photographed asteroids hitting the Moon.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, small ones. Asteroids are manageable ones. Yeah. And asteroids have passed closer to the Earth than the Moon's orbit. That's happened.
Right.
2012, I believe, is the last one. Mm-hmm. So... if you like to worry about things, this is great for you.
Right.
So far, the ones that have passed that close have been relatively small.
So now this is a, let's take a, like, extinction level size object, all right?
Listen to your fluency. Extinction level size. How big is extinction level size, Chuck?
let's go with something like Apophis, all right?
Apophis, which is the Greek, named for the Greek god of anxiety.
Which is perfect. Yeah. Hits the keyhole, barrels towards Earth, instead plows into the Moon.
I guess it would be troublesome moon-wise. But I don't think
would that do anything to us?
I don't think so. I am sure people have run this computer model.
Okay. Okay.
But I don't know it. So I imagine it would just disturb the orbit of the Moon.
Okay.
Rather than it's almost certainly would not be catastrophic life ending on the Moon because the Moon seems to be lifeless. But that's a great question. I'm sure people have run that test. And then would it deflect? You know, the Moon is slowly spiraling away from us.
Yes.
Could it be hit hard enough to start slowly spiraling toward us? I don't know. I don't think so.
Like a pool table. That'd be not awesome. What am I talking about? That'd be the end of all of us.
Well, not right away. You'd probably have several millennia to give it some thought.
And you know what? You'd have some really beautiful nights in the meantime.
Yeah, and then I just shudder to think of all the babies that would... I just can't even...
Yeah.
It'd just be... it would be wild. All right.
All right, here we go. This is Ian Coleman, and Ian says this. Hey, Bill, huge fan here. I was wondering about the possibility of NASA's controversial EM drive being something that could actually work. Apparently, leaks have confirmed that this is the least moving, it's at least moving along well, and they're even saying that it may work. Could we use this in planetary defense?
I don't know what an EM drive is. Electromagnetic? What's that?
No, it's...
Now, there's ion drives. And there's this nuclear weapon idea where you explode a nuclear weapon behind your spacecraft every few seconds for a while to get these pressure waves of particles that push you through space. But I don't know what he means by EM drive, if he means electromagnetic.
No, I think it's supposed to be some kind of new rocket engine.
That's what I mentioned, the nuclear rocket thing. Yeah. Then the other one that we're all hot for is... solar electric propulsion, SEP, solar electric module. So this is where you have something like xenon in a liquid form.
Ooh.
Put in a big scuba tank there on your spacecraft.
Ah.
Use solar power from photovoltaic panels.
Okay.
To make electricity. Ionize, strip the electrons off the xenon, have a grid akin to a window screen, and shoot the xenon out the back of the spacecraft really, really, really fast. And we do that. We have ion drives right now. Just everybody wants to build a big one, a really big one. And it takes a lot of xenon, but the other thing, it takes a lot of electricity. And when you get things that big in space, it's just getting everything in alignment is tricky. But here's the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Although each atom of xenon or argon or whatever inert gas you're going to use or element you're going to use although it is very low mass, each individual atom, they're going so fast.
Okay.
24/7 out the back of the spacecraft that you can go really, really fast. Much faster is generally presumed than you can with just a regular chemical rocket because it never stops.
Right. So it's on all the time. That's actually cool.
And we use ion drives, but people want to build a really big one.
Okay. All right. All right. So this is Jason Leber. Jason says this. Using asteroids to destroy asteroids.
Whoa. That's like so out there. Deflect one asteroid so its gravity nudges another asteroid.
That's
that,
right.
My friend Chuck, that would be two words. Rocket science.
Rocket right science.
There. Yes.
Yeah. Harnessing asteroids in a planetary-like orbit, keeping them on a proverbial leash until we need to crash them into an oncoming asteroid.
Oh, that's hard. That's pretty hard. Another idea for you asteroid buffs is go to an asteroid with a big enough solar panel and yet-to-be-figured-out system to dig up the ice off the asteroid or cometary body, comet-like body, volatilize, zap, cook the ice into liquid water and then into hydrogen and oxygen, H2O.
Oh!
Using electricity over months or years.
Right.
Then when you need to deflect an asteroid, you recombine those into rocket fuel.
And now the asteroid has its own rockets.
Or you take your rocket from one icy asteroid to the one you want to deflect, all out there in deep orbital space.
Right.
That is rocket science, people. It's cool to speculate, but a quite difficult thing to do. Now, you know what is at some level difficult, but at another level so much fun?
What's that?
The lightning round.
Oh!
And the lightning round now has a chicken. A rubber chicken with a pneumatic system that makes it crow. Except that's surprising use of that verb. Makes it chicken.
Right.
Makes it roost. Makes it
yes.
Gobble. No, it makes it make a sound.
It, yes.
So let's take a question in the lightning round, Chuck, who's thoroughly charmed by Edvina the chicken. Yes.
Edvina, I'm such a juvenile person. What can I say?
We all are. We're guys.
Let's get right to the lightning round with NASA. More likely losing funding, which will likely happen. Which agency of defense will we see an increased budget for like SETI, or will Russia or Japan increase funding to their native program?
Well, here's the thing. Without U.S. investment in rockets, Roscosmos, the Russian space agency, doesn't have as many rockets to sell. Don't sell as many rockets, so their agency goes down. Japan is working all the time to maintain its space agency because they have other concerns there. And Japan's populace is shrinking, and people there are freaking out about, are we going to have enough workers in the future, and so they're going to have to allow immigration. Whoa, so it's crazy things. But with that said, the talk is taking Earth science out of NASA and putting it into NOAA. And if it was zero sum, that is to say, if they really just transferred money rather than slashing, everything would be okay. Chuck, what do you think the chances are of everything being okay in the next 4 years? Let's take another one.
Here we go. Alan Pelasco says, Mr. Nye, how deep should I build my bunker and how much food and water should I store, since the only other option is to try to get a front row seat?
To
an asteroid impact.
As much as you want. Carry on.
There you go. Chris Murchison says this, which is more feasible, trying to figure out how to stop the impact or learning how to survive one?
Surviving, I think, is a stone drag. I guess that's a pun. I don't think you can survive a catastrophic asteroid impact where the ecosystem around the world has been completely upset. A small one that just makes tsunamis. Devastates a few coastal cities. Okay, maybe.
Right.
But a dinosaur killing ancient asteroid type thing, nope. Carry on.
Forget about it, huh? Wow. There you go. So really, prevention is it, or we're just...
That's it. Well, sure.
We're cooked.
Yes. It's a low probability, high consequence event.
Man. Woo.
John Parker.
We shook him up.
You did shake me up, man. John Parker says this: Mr. Nye, would it be feasible to send some oil rigs, roughnecks, armed with nuclear warheads and minimal training to an asteroid to blow it up? If so, what would be the actual outcome in your opinion?
It wouldn't work. We'd get another piece of asteroid on a different trajectory that would be just as much trouble.
Boom. There you go. James Peters would like to know this. Hey, Bill, can we use sonic technology to break them up?
There's no air in space to transmit sounds. However, fluid mechanics is such that the particles coming off a nuclear blast can be modeled like a sound wave. It's a different thing, but if you're saying really sound.
No real sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, but a sound wave model.
Like that thing.
Okay, there you go. I just got to read this just to read it. I'm sorry.
Read it. We got a minute.
Here we go. Willie Cutzel says, hello, Dr. Nye. We need science in Guatemala.
Yes.
Please help.
So to that end, the planetary report, we're trying to get it translated into Spanish. So it'll be a little easier for Guatemalan subscribers to enjoy, both on our website and the paper magazine. So we're doing our best to the north to enable our neighbors to the south to know and appreciate the cosmos and our place within it.
Nice. I'm going to give that a chicken scream.
30 seconds, Chuck.
There we go. Nick Fifield says, I love you. Could we use solar sails and an army of solar sails to effectively turn a meteor into a space sleigh?
Well, sort of. So what we do is drape solar sail material onto the asteroid and change its trajectory. The other thing we want to do is use lasers powered by sunlight to zap the asteroid and cause it to deflect. That's it for our show on Cosmic Queries of Star Talk. It's Chuck Nice here with your guest, all-star host Bill Nye. This has been Star Talk. Please keep looking up.